Well, I suppose I was taken by surprise, like most people, how big a story it became. Reflecting about it, I think there are several issues. The first thing is that, as far as I know, is in the Dublin Archdiocese, there isn't a practice of having communion services. I know in other dioceses and around the world, they are very, very frequently done, that lay-led communion services, whereas there are the readings, and then communion is given from the tabernacle, reserved sacrament. But as far as I know, the policy under Archbishop Dermot Martin is not to allow those services. So reflecting on it, I say, well, that probably was one of the things. It did cross my mind, would really the Archbishop have preferred if the congregation had gone home and been told, well, there will be Mass tomorrow, Sunday, and you can come back to Mass here tomorrow. So that was the first thing. Was that a breach of the policy in the diocese? And then the other thing is that my reflection on it is that it's touching a very raw nerve. Obviously, the person and the role of a minister, Madigan, the role that she had in the referendum campaign, which is obviously still very recent, would have obviously alienated some people. And some people would have wondered even how could she still be a minister of the word when we have had some bishops saying that people voting yes should go to consider going to confession. So Minister Madigan, having led the campaign for yes in the referendum, would have been a target for people questioning even her continuing membership of the Catholic Church and being even receiving communion. So then to see her as part of leading a service and obviously giving communion, some people would have queried that. But ultimately, and underneath, I think it's touching on the deep crisis in the Dublin Diocese, but in Ireland and in the wider Western world anyway, and Western Church generally, the role and place of women in the Church, the continuing ban on women priests, and of also the fact that the priests in the Dublin Diocese and elsewhere as well are diminishing in numbers and growing in age. I think just yesterday I actually saw that another young, in inverted comma, young priest of the Dublin Diocese, age 45, had left, I think, to get married.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, do you think Archbishop Martin reacted too strongly to it as well, that he seemed to come out very strongly against what she had done, rather than, as you say, thinking what did he prefer her to do, to just send everybody home or just to tell everybody to go home? But I suppose because, as you say, she had that such a role in the referendum, and because she has a political position, maybe he felt like that made it a stronger statement, and so she shouldn't have done it.
Well, my belief is that the Archbishop of Dublin, Dermot Martin, is under a lot of pressure at the moment. There's a papal visit coming. The spotlight has been on Ireland, the religious spotlight was on Ireland in view of the referendum. And now with the World Meeting of Families, with some of the controversies around it in connection with gay people, and also with the statements that Mary McAleese made when she was banned from the Vatican. So all that has brought a lot of attention towards the Catholic Church in Ireland and Dublin now. And the Archbishop obviously feels very sensitive and wants to give an image, I think, that he's fully in charge in his diocese. There's no shortage of priests for Sunday Mass, because that's one of the first duties of a bishop, is to provide the faithful with the Eucharist every Sunday. So I think any suggestion that there may be cracks appearing on the wall, I think, have to be dismissed, even if it means, I think, I'm afraid, but I'll say it as it is, you know, just papering over increasingly bigger cracks. And then, of course, the situation of women, it becomes increasingly untenable, and the repeated statements that God doesn't want women priests no longer, you know, as the authorities that it used to have. And I think it made for a very explosive situation, and it's just a combination of factors and outside pressures on Archbishop Martin to be seen A, to be in charge of his diocese, to have enough priests for people to have mass, and to hold the line against women priests. It has become a core teaching. I mean, in the words of Archbishop Martin, I said, surely the life, death, resurrection and coming of the Spirit of our core teachings. But it has been elevated, and of course at huge cost. And sadly, we're seeing in what is my mind is a total overreaction, but it is so sensitive. And you know, this is also in a week when I think one of the retired bishops in England, Bishop Vincent Crowley, said quite astonishingly, he said that since 1965, since the time he was ordained, he believed women could be priests. And then he was made a bishop, and he said he could never speak his opinion about women being priests because he had been advised against it. But now that he's retired, he feels free to say it. So I said, well, so much for a core teaching of the church. But my next question is, how many others, bishops, priests, know that it is not a core teaching of the church and it is not the will of God to exclude women? And I think keep silent. And I think deep down, I think Archbishop Martin knows that. And I think it becomes, the pressure, it mounts, and I think something has to give. And I think that's what is happening. Because otherwise, how do you explain such total overreaction to something which is quite commonplace in other parts of the world, and even other parishes? But you know, I think it was reported as well, in inverted comma, in some media, that Josepha Madigan had been saying Mass, and that is, I think, the absolute nightmare, that a woman would be presiding at a Eucharist seems to have become the absolute nightmare of a male celibate clerical controlled church, which has now bogged itself down into something, painted itself into a corner and cannot extricate itself from it, and will just is led to, in a way, talking about bizarre, I think the reaction of the Archbishop was bizarre.
Yeah, but a lot of people have pointed out that she didn't say Mass, and as you said, she just did what a lot of people are doing in other parishes and in other communities, where in the absence of having a priest, or it may be organised if there isn't always a priest available, that they say some prayers and they have communion that has already been consecrated by the priest. So it's not such an unusual thing.
No, and actually, I know in France it's very common now in a lot of parishes, and has been, but also in Africa and South America. And I have friends who are religious and had been in South America, and they said, oh, well, the people sometimes say, oh, we prefer the nun's Mass or sister's Mass rather than the priest. And of course, that's what the authorities are absolutely terrified of, is that this blurring and then this gradual sense that women leading prayer service will gradually lead the unthinkable, the absolute nightmare, women presiding at the Eucharist. Well, if they could remember, the first person who gave us the body and blood of Christ was a woman who could truly say, this is my flesh and blood, and that was Mary. If they could remember that, they would lose their terror and some of their misogyny, I'm afraid, which is behind it all.
Do you think it's a storm in a teacup, or do you think it's quite symbolic and it will push things to a crisis?
At one level, one could say it is a storm in a teacup, but it's not, because to me it has shown how sensitive that nerve is, because it's live. It's a live issue. They have tried. John Paul II tried to kill it off in 1994, making definite statement there were going to be no more discussion on women priests. That was in 1994. Now, Pope Francis, every few weeks, has to reaffirm the door is closed, the door is closed, the door is closed to women priests. If you have to constantly reaffirm that, it shows that it has failed. In fact, it's pointing out that there is a door. It has been closed, but anybody knows that a door which is closed is a door which can be opened. It points to the fact that there is an opening in the wall. There is a door. A door is usually a passage. It's for passing through. So everybody knows the door will be opened at some stage. And trying to delay at huge cost, the inevitable is heading for failure, but so it is not going to go away. That particular storm will abate, but the issue will remain and will keep on resurfacing on. And I have to say it's quite an ironical that it was in the church dedicated to Saint Therese, because Saint Therese, unofficially is patron saint of women priests, she stated very clearly her desire to be a priest well over 100 years ago, and she even had got the sisters in our convent to give her the tonsure, which at the time was part of the ritual for ordination, the shaving of the crown of the head. And that was done. Our sisters testified to that in the process for beatification. And she also said that she would die at the age of 24 because she couldn't be ordained, and 24 was the age for ordination. And she did die at the age of 24, as she saw it, to be spared the pain of not being able to fulfill my ministry. So I thought about it, and I said, I think Saint Therese is sending more roses to the church, but some of those roses come in the gifts of, with thorns, as far as the Archbishop is seeing them. But I think that it's gift. But again, when I was, you know, about 14 years ago, I went and I did speak to Dermot Martin about my vocation to the priesthood. And way before that, when I was still in my 30s, I spoke to Don Murray and offered myself for the priesthood. And of course, it's just a nightmare for them. Any woman who has a sense of vocation to the priesthood is a headache and a nightmare. But I'm afraid the nightmare keeps resurfacing.